It's delightful to see you all here. And Carol was talking about this, how it does really, we get used to new forms, new technologies, and it feels like we're gathering. It feels like we're together in some way. But I do like to remember something that's also a little inspiring to me about this form is how our meditation hall here, in this case, it's as big as the whole country and Canada. It's including that space. And so we can think about the expansiveness of that, being together in such a big space. And being able to stay connected. So in reflecting about what to offer this afternoon, I thought about in my own journey with this practice and in talking to people about this practice, how much it feels like part of our journey in this particular form of practice is really uncovering and the word that came to my mind is shattering the beliefs that we have about meditation. The ideas, the agendas that we have about what meditation is, what practice is. In my own journey of practice, one of the biggest shifts happened around the understanding, the recognition that it really does not matter what is happening. Carol mentioned this too. It just doesn't matter what's happening. And mindfulness can be aware of anything. We may not always have the capacity to be with something in particular, but there's nothing, no experience that is inherently anti-mindfulness, except perhaps the absence of mindfulness. But any state of mind, spaciness, sleepiness, confusion, dullness, love, excitement, caught in a whirlpool of thoughts, all of it, we can be aware of. And confidence in that really makes practice so much simpler. So I wanted to speak about some of the ways that we might have agendas or beliefs about meditation, and maybe try to shake some of those up. So sometimes I think we might have the sense or the belief that meditation happens when the mind is in a particular state. For me, at one point, I was at Shui U Min meditating in Sayadaw Utejaniya's monastery, and noticed as I was doing walking meditation, and as I was shifting back to go to my room to practice in my room, I was doing lying posture mostly, so I was going to do lying meditation. As I was walking back to my room, I noticed my mind trying to shift its state in order to put itself into a state that would be more conducive to still posture meditation. And what that was essentially a subtle suppression of thought. Fortunately, there was awareness of what was going on in the mind, and I saw this. I saw the kind of trying to construct some kind of a state in order to meditate better, something like that. And the immediate thought that arose was, well, what's wrong with this state? Why not just be aware of this? In fact, there already was awareness of that state. And it was just simple. It's just simple. Sometimes I think this belief comes from a certain familiarity of particular, a certain familiarity with meditation and certain states that come along with meditation. And we start to believe that those states are the point, as opposed to the process of just being aware. So there isn't a need to put yourself in any particular state in order to be aware. We can be aware of anything. And yet we find this thought coming up, and this is how some of these beliefs about agendas about meditation may express themselves. We may see a belief something like, I can't be mindful while this state is happening. I can't be mindful while I'm this sleepy. How many of you have had that thought? I can't be mindful while I'm this sleepy. It's a pretty common belief. But I'd like to propose to you that if you have that thought, if you are having the thought, I can't be aware of such and such, that you already have enough awareness to be aware of that. Often the thought is, I can't be aware while such and such is happening. And what that often is about, for instance, with sleepiness, this happened to me a lot. In fact, I went through a long stretch of time where there was a very low energy state in most of my retreats for a couple years. It was just such torpor, such low energy. And I remember that thought over and over again. If I'm too low energy to meditate, I just can't do this. And then I would notice seeing's happening and I'm aware of seeing. Hearing is happening and I'm aware of hearing. There's already awareness here. So if you notice that thought, and often I think that thought will come in, like sleepiness, for instance, the idea with I can't practice while this sleepiness is happening or this dullness of mind is happening. Often that is a belief that's connected to what we think the meditation is supposed to be about. So we think the meditation is supposed to be about observing certain objects clearly, being able to have some precision about what we're recognizing, what we're knowing. I think that's what meditation is. And so that idea, I can't be practicing while I'm sleepy, is connected with an underlying belief about what it means to be practicing. And so if you're having that thought, and in this style of practice, and certainly in other forms of meditation practice, such as concentration practice, there may be too much low energy to turn the attention and direct it to the breath, for example. It may just be exhausting for the mind to do that. So in certain forms of meditation practice, there may be too low energy to do that form of practice. In this form of practice, if there's low energy and you have that thought, I have not got enough energy to be aware, you're already aware of that state. You already know it. And so this idea, I can't be aware while such and such is happening. See if you can be curious about the such and such that you think is in the way of being aware. So I can't be aware while sleepiness is happening, but you're already aware that sleepiness is happening. It may be hard to see through the fog of that sleepiness to connect with a body sensation or a breath or a sound, but I'd like to propose that it might be not that hard to just align with and be aware, this is what it's like to be sleepy. That's all that in this practice, that's all we have to do. Just align with what is already here, what we are already aware of. When I'm talking about this particular example, I often like to bring in an analogy of a mirror, that mindfulness can be, we can kind of have an analogy of thinking of mindfulness as being like a mirror. A mirror reflects what's in front of it. A mirror doesn't particularly care what it reflects. The mirror is not impacted by what it reflects. It reflects beautiful things. It reflects ugly things. It reflects boring things. The mirror doesn't have an opinion about what it reflects. Its job is to reflect, and that's it. And you put something else in front of it, that's what it reflects. So the reflecting power of the mirror is not changed by what is being reflected. Similarly with mindfulness. The job of mindfulness is to be aware, to know, to recognize what's arising. Mindfulness itself doesn't care what it knows. Its job is just to be aware. This is what's happening. This is what's happening. We think about that mirror now in a bathroom that's got a lot of steam in it, and the mirror is coated with fog, coated with steam. So we're standing in front of the mirror. The mirror is, you know, not reflecting us very clearly. We're not seeing ourselves very clearly in the mirror. And probably we'll, you know, do some action, wipe the mirror off so that we can see ourselves more clearly. But if you think about the way mirrors work, that mirror is doing its job already. It is already reflecting every single drop of water on the surface of the mirror. It's just not doing the job we want it to do in that moment. And likewise with the mind that has sleepiness or dullness in it, it's like the sleepiness or dullness is kind of close to the mindfulness. It's a fog, perhaps, a kind of a sense of a fog over the in the field of awareness. And if we have an agenda about what we want the awareness to be doing or looking at or seeing, there's going to be some frustration. But the awareness can just know that sleepiness or dullness very simply. Oh, this is what it's like to have a sleepy mind. This is what it's like. So that belief or that view, I can't be aware while such and such is happening, or a different version of that belief, something like, I'm not meditating properly if such and such is happening. Carol mentioned that one. Check the awareness. Are you aware? Is there awareness? And what is that awareness already knowing? no agenda about what awareness should be knowing. Just this is what is already happening. This is the state. This is the experience. Check the awareness. Are you aware? Is there awareness? This is so important. The recognition that we know that we're aware. It really is the thread it's what helps us to recognize the establishment of mindfulness, the continuity of mindfulness, is when we recognize that we are aware. Because we're not focusing on objects here. The objects can change. They're such dynamic range of what the objects can be. But when we begin to recognize, yes, this is, I know that I'm aware. It doesn't matter what the objects are. Sometimes we don't even know what the objects are. Sometimes we know that we're aware and we have no idea what we're aware of. That's another belief sometimes in meditation, that we think in order to be being mindful properly, that we have to know what the object is. And sometimes we don't. Sometimes we are aware and we have no idea what the object is or what the experience is. That can sometimes create an attitude of confusion in the mind, and then you can be aware of that. It's like, oh, wow, I'd have no idea what is happening here. And there's confusion in the mind. But sometimes it's useful when that kind of experience happens. I know that I'm aware, but I don't know. I mean, sometimes I've had this experience. I'll describe this. So I know that I'm aware, and there is experience happening. It's like, I know there's sound going on, there's body sensations. It's not that I'm not aware of those things. It's not that they're not happening. Not that, you know, there's not kind of a recognition that those experiences are going on, but that doesn't feel like what the attention is really oriented towards. And so there's a little bit of a sense of something else is going on, but I don't know what it is. If that happens, you can just simply recognize, I don't know what is happening. I don't know what the object is. There's awareness and not knowing. Sometimes it's useful to be able to have some kind of way to acknowledge those kinds of experiences. It helps our mind. Even just acknowledging, I don't know what's happening, our minds can kind of settle back and say, oh, that's what's happening. I don't know what's happening. That experience of not knowing, not being aware, but not clear about what the experience is that's happening. Sometimes that's, I'll just say one of the ways I've seen that happen is as the mindfulness starts to get interested in experiences that we are not so familiar with. This happens in different ways. Sometimes if we're paying attention, or if the mind is on kind of the qualities of the various experiences, the qualities of various, like the breath, for instance. Sometimes the mind will land with the breath and it gets very interested in the sensations of the breath. And as the kind of continuity of that mindfulness gets stronger and the attention stays with the breath, sometimes the mindfulness gets interested in like subtler experience that, you know, we're almost not so attuned to, consciously attuned to. So I've seen this happen sometimes when the attention was with the breath, that the mind would start to wander at a certain point. The mind would start to wander when the breath got so subtle that I couldn't track it myself anymore. I had the agenda. I had to track the sensations. And there's at a certain point, the mindfulness was attending or curious about sensations that my mind was not aware of anymore. The conscious, the familiar, it was not the familiar sensations anymore. And when I noticed that, and actually I reported something like this to Upandita at one point, I said, the sensations of the breath get so quiet that I can't be aware of it anymore. And he said, just know that there's subtle sensation. That's all you have to know. So the as the mindfulness gets stronger, sometimes the attention gravitates towards more quiet sensation, experience, things that we're not familiar with, experience we're not familiar with. Another way this happens is, again, with an agenda of our meditation, we often, Carol was talking about looking at a picture and how, you know, we might zoom in on a particular face and start looking at the details of a particular person, but that we can also kind of zoom back and be aware of the whole thing. Sometimes our minds more want to zoom back and we have the agenda to be more focused. Our habit or our way of practicing, our usual familiar way of practicing, is to look at the details, look at the specifics. And that's what we've been trained to do. You know, our cultures emphasize this. You know, our cultures emphasize paying attention to the specific experiences, what's going on, so that we can identify specific things and with some clarity. And that experience in meditation, when we start to get connected with mindfulness to the sensations that we're more familiar with, the body sensations coming and going, thoughts coming and going, even emotions, things that we're familiar with, that we can identify. Yes, that's what that is. That's the experience of frustration. And here's how that shows up in the body. Or that's the sensation of pressure. And here's how that feels in this particular moment. Kind of very discrete or particular sensations or experiences. Often early in our practice, at some point in our practice, we have experiences of real clarity of those kinds of objects. Real clarity. And it seems easy to just be with the next arising object, the next arising object, the next arising object. And then we think that that's what good meditation is. Having that kind of clarity about those kinds of objects. M- But there's also a whole different kind of experience that I used the word the other day, diffuse objects, diffuse experience, kind of like the fog of sleepiness or that fog on the mirror. Those kind of states, there's a lot of them in meditation. There's a lot of kind of diffuse experience that happens in meditation. And at certain times, the attention gets more interested in that diffuseness. Diffuse experience. So sometimes, I'm going to give an example of a diffuse experience. The way the mind attends to diffuse experience is different. It's not as focused. It's much more kind of this feeling of broadness or stepped back. But we all know this. There is a way in which we are familiar with attending to diffuse experience. So an example, the experience of being out in the weather and rain is falling. You can feel the kind of discrete sensation of water dropping on your skin. That's the more precise kind of experience. You can recognize it. Oh yeah, the rain is starting. You feel it. You feel the drops of water. That's a kind of precise experience. But we also know or understand the experience of humidity, which is a different experience of moisture in the air. How do we know humidity? You know, it's not because of a precise sensation on the skin in a particular spot. It's a much broader experience. It's connected with kind of the feeling of the air over the entire exposed skin area, the way the breath feels, the kind of the way the breath feels. There's much more broad information that's coming in about that diffuse experience. But we walk outside and we know it's dry or it's humid. We just know that in an instant. So that's a kind of the system taking in diffuse experience. Another example of this is like looking up in the night sky, looking at the Milky Way in the night sky. That's taking in a diffuse experience. The wash of that, the Milky Way, is a different experience than taking in a planet or the moon. You know, that kind of focusing in to see the Milky Way, there's a kind of a stepping back and taking in the breadth of it. So we know how to take in these diffuse experiences a little bit, but there's less familiarity with taking in diffuse mind states. They happen to us all the time. We just haven't learned how to notice them. And so I think that for me, this has been a big learning curve. It's been a big learning in this particular form of practice. And I think it's one of the key things that I learned from Sayadaw Utejaniya was how to observe this diffuse state of mind. I knew how to look at emotions. I knew how to know that anger was arising in the mind. But the quality of the mind, whether it had a kind of a sense of pullback or a lean toward, or the sense of ease or fuzziness, I knew when I was tired or sleepy, but understanding the state, the experience of the state of mind that is low energy or sleepy, That came a little bit later, and it was a learning curve for me. It was a learning to begin to recognize, oh, I can just know fogginess. I can know sleepiness. And some of that understanding or that recognition comes from how do I expect the objects to look? And they're not experienced that way sometimes. So it's like there's this veil or fog. I'm not seeing the objects the way I would like to or the way I'm used to, but the kind of the awareness of that fog. And fog is another good analogy. We can, you know, if we look out in terms of that diffuse experience, if we look out on a foggy day, you know, we notice that the objects are fuzzy. You can still see them, perhaps. I have a palm tree outside my window, and it's not a really clear day, so there's just a little bit of haze between me and that palm tree. And I know that kind of haze because of how that palm tree looks. On a clear day, there's much more precision to the palm tree. I'm not blaming my eyes here for that fuzziness. There's the understanding of kind of just this little bit of haze that's there that can be known. That same kind of knowing can happen in terms of our mind, in terms of the various states of mind. And often those states of mind that we think we can't be mindful while such and such is happening, they have some of that quality of the diffuseness, of that diffuse experience. Thinking if there's more I want to share about that. One more piece. This pointing to getting familiar or being okay when the experience is not as familiar, you know, that kind of the sense of something's happening and I'm not sure what's happening. Sometimes it's one of these diffuse states that's happening that we're just not so familiar with. We don't really know how to name it or identify it. We don't have a name for it. And so sometimes that place where it's like, well, I'm aware, but I have no idea what I'm aware of. It may be one of those diffuse states. And so you could explore just the kind of like, well, maybe, you know, what else is here? Sometimes that's a question that I find useful sometimes. What else is happening right now? What else is here? And not have any agenda about having a particular kind of experience, a particular kind of recognition of experience. The piece that I wanted to point to or to drop in terms of gaining some comfort with being okay that we don't know what's happening, that we're not familiar with the experiences that are happening. Freedom, the Buddha points to freedom. The absence of greed, the absence of aversion, the absence of delusion. We have no idea what that experience is. We might have some ideas about it. We might think we have an idea about it. I certainly thought I had ideas about it. But freedom is... The Buddha gives some words to it, but basically, you know, the absence of is mostly what is pointed to, not the presence of anything. And so if we're always oriented to looking for, having to be with what we already know, our minds won't be able to open to that unknow. That unfamiliar experience. And so we can almost think about this exploration of, you know, recognizing I don't have any idea what's happening, and getting comfortable with not knowing what's happening, getting comfortable with that experience of not knowing what the experience is, as practice for opening to freedom. The mind has to let go of whatever it's attached to. It's to let go of everything. For freedom. So that's, I think that's enough reflections for me. So Kathy, why don't we break the recording?